The following programming is sponsored by Bruce Grossinger. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.
Welcome in to Rover Sports. Sports Talk here on a beautiful Tuesday night. People are rolling in. We are in a beautiful perch, One Ballot Plaza, and we have Colin Newby and Matt Vito here in the studio. We have Charlie Bowles, who is calling from the Houndstooth, one of the most luxurious places to watch any sport. Spencer Grossinger is on his way. Dr. Lewis is making a house call, literally, and may be calling in. Coach Daish is a Penn Charter soccer coach, and he'll be coming in. But the big story, I guess, always seems to be the Philadelphia Eagles. And I attended the game, and I'll give you my take, and I'm going to throw it to Charlie. So, oh, look, at there's Josh. Let's see what he has to say. Hey, Josh. I'm already in. So Colin is going to call it. So you know what's great about live radio and live TV? It's live. And Josh Daish is here. And that is important because he will be doing, of course, the Fearless Picks. But we actually started on time today. Well, they're going to turn off the ringer. So in any event, that is always good with live radio. So getting back to the Philadelphia Eagles, some thoughts. Number one, the Eagles seem to play down to the level of their competition. And indeed, they sometimes get swallowed up by their competition. And in this case, the Cleveland Browns hung tough there. The Eagles again didn't score in the first quarter. They had some important injuries, and they ended up eking out a victory. And why did they win? Really, two big plays. A big play, a big pass to A.J. Brown in the end zone, and a good pass by Jalen Hurts, and another good play, a mesh play, where Devontae Smith did a slant across, and I think a well-called play by Kellen Moore. And basically, those two plays heralded victory for the Philadelphia Eagles. They made it close on that blocked field goal running back by Rodney McLeod. That certainly got things close when it was a tie game. So that is the story. Charlie, welcome in. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing well, Doc. Thank you so much for asking. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about. I'm glad we got started on time today. And I guess there's a lot to talk about with the Philadelphia Eagles, the coaching, the circus surrounding Sirianni, and as well as around the league, some crazy games to talk about. I'm wearing my Texas Longhorn shirt for all of those who are watching YouTube in Phyllis Sports Doc. That's our new thing. For many of you on 97.5 HD2, you'll note that Bruce Grossinger Facebook has been taken down because we actually got hacked. After like 15 years, we got hacked and we had to take down our Facebook page. So we will be reemerging. We'll be reemerging very soon. But nonetheless, many of you will watch on our YouTube, Phyllis Sports Doc or Slaughterhouse Sports. And I'm just putting a big plug out for the Seth Joyner pregame and postgame show. As you know, this Cub reporter, a.k.a. Sports Doc, will be doing the postgame. And we've been talking about the injury, so that's been really good. And we've been having a very nice reception. I think I had 5,000 of these wonderful patrons, I call them patrons, from the Philadelphia area, logging on to watch my injury report with Seth Joyner, Mark Forzetta, and D. Gunn, and that's certainly something that's been exciting. So, Charlie, what did you make of that Eagles game?
Well, I mean, again, I don't know if the Eagles are playing down to their competition or they just are that competition. In a way, look, there were some positives. For the first time in a year, they didn't turn the ball over. But again, they remained dead last in takeaways. I think the only two they have is the two interceptions by Reed Blankenship. So, again, if like you said, if it wasn't for the two big plays, what do you have? A bunch of nothing. So against one of the worst teams in the NFL. So usually you thought this Giant game would be a winnable game. Beginning of the year, I'm sure everyone marked it as a win. But this week, not so sure.
So, Charlie, this is going to be a great day because we're going to obviously talk about the Eagles. We have Coach Daishi here. And your thoughts of that Eagles game, again, I thought it was a kind of a slugfest. The game was very boring, especially the first half. There's a lot of boos that occurred there. It was not an exciting game to attend, especially the first half. It got a little more exciting in the second half, but it was a game that we thought that they would get well against the Cleveland Browns, but they didn't really. They just eked it out, and they eked it out by 4 points. Coach, what did you make of that Eagles game?
You know, Doc, I know you're obviously one of the top neurologists in the area, but you got to think about, does Nick Sirianni have to come and visit you? Because he seems like he's got a lot of head issues right now, how he's handling the Philadelphia media and all the approaches. Even today, when I heard him on the air, he's defended his fact that his kids would love to come. Now, I know most parents would love to bring their kids to work, but Doc, this guy's, there's something going on upstairs. I'm a little worried about Nick Sirianni, and I'm not sure he can really much run this team as well as the other 31 coaches have done. You know, he could be the next guy out.
Yeah, I think he's very unwrapped. And again, there's only 32 positions there, but it's okay to bring maybe one of your kids, but you bring three kids, and it's not like they romped by 40 points. If you romp by 40 points, maybe it's so festive you bring your kids, but there was so much to talk about there. And also the fact that he knew when he left the stadium, on more than one occasion, he was basically dissing the fans. He had his head holding up. You'd expect that from an opposing team look at them and say, the people are saying fire Nick, but you can't have rabbit ears in this town. And if you diss the fans, particularly the Philadelphia Eagles fans, it's just it's a good way to, it's a quick way to get out of town. They don't typically fire their coaches midseason. They fired Chip Kelly the last game of the season there. And so the season was almost over, but they didn't fire Chip Kelly in season. But there is definitely a rift between the team, Howie Roseman, who was relegated to the equipment room, and Jeff Lurie. And I think that's the earliest that you could have figured a team would fire their coach. But looking here, the Eagles, I'm looking down the barrel of two games, and we're going to get into it. I'm looking down the barrel of an away game against a bad Giants team, and then another team where you're going away to Cincinnati. And that is a game where Cincinnati's hungry. They just want a game. They're starting to feel life again. They're going to be angry. And I think if the Eagles lose the next two games in lackluster fashion, there's a lot of fans who are going to be calling for Sirianni's head.
Well, Doc, I they're already calling for it, and rightfully so. He doesn't handle himself like a professional. You have a quarterback that I'm not sure the relationship. It really seems like it's distant between them. The players seem to enjoy him, but Doc, you talk about this. You talk about the injuries earlier because they're not tackling in preseason. They're not tackling during their. They're not getting their bodies ready. You can't exactly go out and run a marathon and get off the couch and run a marathon. You've got to build that up. And that's what it takes. So, I think if this would be one of those midseason fires, if it happened, would no one in Philadelphia, they would welcome it instead of being surprised by it. A lot of fans were surprised by Robert Saleh getting fired last week. In Philadelphia, we would welcome it. A lot of people were calling for Nick Sirianni's head after last season, the debacle that fell. The offense does not look very good. It looks dry and boring. They brought Kellen Moore into it, and they thought that they'd get more out of it. It just seems like it's not happening. When he gets criticized for it, he doesn't like it. And let's not forget this. if Woody Johnson thinks he's got a stacked offense, I would think the Eagles' offense is slightly better because I think we have a better tight end than Tyler Conklin. But if you look at A.J. Brown's a stud. I mean, A.J. Brown is an elite receiver, one of the top receivers. Saquon Barkley is an elite running back. He only had 47 yards rushing once on Sunday against a bad team, against a bad Browns team. You know, you've got Devontae Smith not getting the ball enough. Dallas Goedert, in the game that he played really well against down in New Orleans, he's been invisible since. So what's really going on with this offense?
Yeah, what I see is a couple things that are of great concern to me. Kellen Moore likes to play a mesh offense. He likes a lot of motion. And if we watched game one against Green Bay, that seems like years ago, doesn't it? Seems like a long time ago. It seems like the game was played in what, Brazil? Maybe because it was. That's how long ago it seems. They actually had 60% of the plays had some kind of motion. And every week, they're dumbing it down more and more. And they are. It's a fact. There's only 40% motion. And so, and I spoke to somebody who, I won't mention his name, who's affiliated with the NFL, who knows Kellen Moore very well. And not even getting any direct, I won't even quote Kellen Moore, but somebody who knows Kellen Moore says that he doesn't believe that Jalen Hurts could grasp the complexity of Kellen Moore. He just can't do it. Those first, again, the season's still young. It's a long season. But when you saw, especially against Tampa Bay, you saw that Jalen Hurts, even when he had a lot of time, he might have 4, 6, 8 seconds. He was back there. He was confused. He doesn't go through progressions. What does he do? He got Calcavecchia. So in this game, when Goddard went out, he locked in on A.J. Brown and Calcavecchia. That's it. He could lock on two receivers. So that's what he did. Somehow he locked on to Calcavecchia. Luckily for him, the Browns weren't really prepared for Calcavecchia at all. But, you know, but Devontae Smith didn't really get involved until the end of the game, and he had that big touchdown pass. But you're right, he was ignored the whole first half, and Saquon Barkley wasn't getting any runs. They weren't giving him touches. They weren't letting him get warm. So you just wonder what's going on there. And even though Hurts didn't turn the ball over, he still looked confused. The RPO is a failure. It seems like whenever they run the RPO, it seems like that's the time where they always they do the wrong thing. You know, either Hurts takes the RPO and gets and they get him behind the line, or the RPO they hand it. It seems like there are a lot of keys that the defense can tell the RPO. They know exactly what's going on. So there's a lot of problems. So if you were to fire Sirianni, Kellen Moore would be the natural, he'd be the natural head coach. And I'm not sure, obviously, I think people would be happy here. I don't know if, you know, obviously Belichick, John Gruden. I mean, I love John Gruden. He's my favorite guy. But I don't know mid-season whether they would do something like that or they got through the bye already. The bye was important because they all got healthy. You know, you had Lane Johnson got healthy. Obviously, the two wide receivers got healthy. And now Goddard, who I think still out with his hamstring, as far as I know, and I haven't gotten up, Mailata, it's still Tuesday night, he's still out.
He's definitely going to be out for a couple weeks.
He's going to be out a couple weeks. And they had to cart him into the locker room. And that's a bad hamstring. He's a big guy. And, of course, the problem with Slay is he had a knee. He's had a gimpy knee.
Yeah.
And so he didn't have an injury per se. Like, there wasn't a play where he got injured. But he voluntarily took himself out of the game because his left knee was hurting him. And so these are three important players. I know we're going to do our fearless picks. But I think this might be a good time to pivot to a different sport, which would be baseball. Charlie, you watch a lot of baseball. Some perplexing things happened today for the Phillies. They basically upped all of their coaches, including Rob Thompson, including Long, who's the hitting coach, which surprises me. So they basically extended all their coaches through 2026. Dombrowski gave a press conference today where he essentially, in my view, seemed like he was in denial. Like, he basically didn't acknowledge what happened. You know, in some of the clips that I heard, Dombrowski said, well, the Mets were actually swinging. They had more. They were swinging out of the zone more than the Phillies. Well, that might be a statistical situation. And he was basically saying, I know there are two definite outfielders, or Mars and Castellanos. Now, maybe he's just trying to prop up their value for a trade. But listen to him. He just seemed like he was wearing rose-colored glasses. I want to hear Coach Daichi, then I want to hear Charlie. Coach, what do you make of that? I mean, is that disappointing to hear as a Phillies fan?
Well, in my opinion, you know, I think you're not going to get rid of a lot of this core, Doc, because they have such long contracts, all right? Now, Castellanos, Charlie, love him or hate him, I think he fits Philadelphia very well. And he's not afraid to leave with it on his shoulder and his sleeve because he's grimy, he's a fighter, and he's made a lot of big plays this year for the Phillies. You know, I'm not thrilled with the fact Trey Turner's becoming Tobias Harris in Philadelphia. He really is. He's wearing out his welcome. I would love for them to go back to playing small ball. I think Marsh should go. I think Rojas has done nothing. I think I would try to move Schwarber. I want to go back to small ball, bring the guys up front.
So, Charlie, you're the general manager for a day. Obviously, Josh had a lot of ideas. You watch a lot of Phillies baseball, a lot of baseball overall. You're the GM. Let me let you run with the ball a little bit. What would you do? You look at this team and go through the hitters, and let's hear about the pitchers. Go ahead, Charlie.
Well, I've been on an island for 2 years saying that this team is not good enough. And at the trade deadline, they blew a great opportunity. Their outfield was so far below average. I was astonished that anyone in the world thought that this Hayes guy was going to make a difference. Their outfield is probably one of the worst in baseball. Brad Marsh, was it Marsh? I can't even remember his name right now. I'm so angry.
Yes, you're right. Brandon Marsh.
Brad Marsh
was much better. I think he could play better. Brad Marsh would hit better than Brandon Marsh.
Old number eight, yeah. But I'm telling you, bringing Marsh back, are you – God, like I said, the starting pitching – relatively solid. Suarez was probably hurt the second half of the year. He gets a pass. But this lineup is just not good enough. So you can say they all have great spat. They all have great like streaks. But as a whole, they don't hit behind runners. You know, right. they're just not good fundamental baseball players. They all have their own strengths. Like Harper's one of the best Phillies ever. But this team is just not good enough. Remember the Lakers when they saw when they assigned Karl Malone, Gary Payton, they had a bunch of all-stars, but nobody that played, they didn't play well together. For whatever reason, this team is missing something. I think it's team speed. They're outfield, they have no power. They hit the average is probably 230 per player, and they have no power at all. The backup catcher is a joke. He's a clown.
I think he's gone.
The backup catcher is just like a DJ for postgame. I think that's something we all could do. I think Matt Vito would spin better records anyway. Matt's amazing. You know, he's our videographer. You know, you look at that and you wonder, here's a question. Josh, I'm going to throw this at you. Trey Turner is the worst fielding shortstop in the league, not the second worst. And obviously, you're kind of stuck with him. He's a guy who can run. He could probably field fly balls. He probably can hit better. He can hit better than Marsh, although obviously he only had three hits in the postseason against the Mets. To go out in the first round like that is to go out like 3-1 was a stunning and a stinging loss. Would you consider moving Turner to the outfield, or do you think that's a bridge too far?
No, I don't think it's a bad idea. I don't think it'll happen with his contract being the size that it is. I really don't, Doc. I think people have discussed it. I just don't see it happening. Charlie, real quick, I don't think Stubbs is coming back. Marshawn's playing too well. If he stays healthy, I think he's catching more than half the games next year because Realmuto, we know, is on his last legs. I don't think Realmuto has any more power left. I think he's pretty much, you know, on the tail end, Doc.
Right, and again, Realmuto, I really love him. He's a great guy, but I think he's a broken-down horse. He really couldn't hit at all. You know, you could see he didn't have any base. As far as having a base for hitting, he calls, you know, he's a great catcher. He got the most out of everybody. Charlie, Ranger Suarez, he called a game where Ranger, it was with smoke and mirrors, really.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He loaded the bases every time, and it was just amazing. You were just waiting for the dam to collapse.
It did.
You know,
it sure as hell did with that
grand slam. But, you know, I think that it's just, especially that position really wears you out. And you've got Schwarber who's DHing. I can't see him. Yeah. You know, you say, could JT, But his real strength is as a catcher. So I just don't know.
The one thing that Dombrowski pointed out, Charlie, and I'm sure you may have heard it, and I didn't listen to all of it, but they're counting on Andrew Painter to be a solid starter next year. So he's coming back off the Tommy John. He's pitching in the Arizona League. He's looked pretty solid. He's hitting 98 and 99 consistently. So I think there's a pit there. I think of all the guys that they have, this is the guy that they're really focusing on. There's several free agents. Hoffman's a free agent. I would not bring back Alvarado. So there's other guys that are out there. I think Sanchez, Charlie, you're right. Their starting pitching staff, very good, very consistent. I love Wheeler. I think Nola's Nola. I think Painter's going to be a future star. Suarez, I definitely think, is hurt. I really do. I mean, it might even put him back in the bullpen. And Sanchez was rock solid for him.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Suarez was hurt. And I think that he was really gutty, you know, to even make it through five scoreless innings. But I like their starting pitching. Their bullpen really was disappointing because Hoffman, you had Strom in there who was an all-star.
Yep.
And you had Hoffman who was an all-star. Spencer, you were looking at the Phillies. What do you think of their relievers there? And do you see them getting rid of any of these relievers?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of the draft picks that they've had, I mean, it's just a shame, Josh, that like Mick Abel's not really working out, is he? Like,
he's
a first round pick, Mick Abel.
But Spencer, like, first round picks are dime a dozen in baseball. They really are. Like, there's not too many. Like, you're not going to see too many Paul Skeens and Jackson Holidays that just come up right off the bat. Like, there's so many first round picks. They're like five star basketball players coming out of high school. They just majority of them don't pan out.
Well, yeah, the fact that Painter is obviously working out.
Painter looks good. Alec Bohm and Stott are first rounders, and same with Aaron Nola. So sometimes they can work out. And you know, this Crawford player is okay. But really, I would like to get a new closer. I want to get a closer, a guy who can throw 98. The Yankees have this journeyman closer, who's 31 years old. That's an absolute stud. Charlie, do you know the name of the Yankees closer? Like, isn't he good, the Yankees closer?
I don't know if he, again, you mean the skinny kid. God, what is his name?
Yeah, it's okay. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. No. I would say the biggest
Weaver
issue, the guy's name is Luke Weaver, right.
Weaver. Yeah.
I would say that the biggest issue is getting a definite bullpen guy. I don't think Hoffman's stuff is unbelievable. Strom is not the fastest guy, but he's like okay in terms of his off speed. He's an off speed guy. He's not going to blow you
by
with a fastball.
He's a young enough guy with a small contract. So I think Strom is an up and coming guy. There's Carlos Estevez, I think was on a 1 year deal, I believe.
He's done, yeah.
And I don't see, again, there were, he showed flashes, but the fact is, They really signed him. He was an acquisition to be a closer, and they knew he wasn't a closer. And he also gave up some big meatball bombs in there. I think Alvarado is so, you know, the problem with Alvarado is he's so not confident in his stuff. That Alvarado is he just has such poor command that he ends up throwing it. You know, again, these hitters are used to like all these. They're used to seeing high velocity.
Right.
So his 95, 98, even 99, when he's putting it right down the middle,
he doesn't
they're teeing off on Alvarado.
He doesn't have versatility. He's a one-trick pony.
And I think that he faded out just like Dominguez. Same kind of guy. They got rid of him. You know, some people, of course, you always miss what you don't have. So some people said, "Boy, we wish we had Dominguez."
I didn't.
Did you miss him, Josh?
No. Not at all. I think Dominguez, when he was gone for those 2 years, his best years were before the arm issue, and that was during COVID. So I did not miss him at all. I was glad to see him.
Charlie, there was a question here, Charlie, about Alec Bohm. Just to throw the elephant in the room is Alec Bohm, you know, we remember when he dissed the fans and he spoke under his breath. He came back. The first half of the season, he was played like an all-star. He was fielding very well. Then he got hurt. He hurt his hand, and he came back. To me, he still looked hurt. And why do I say that? When he was ice cold, he came back, and the fans were cheering. He hadn't seen a pitch, and he swung at the first pitch, and he was terrible. It didn't get any hits. And I don't know. He's got an unusual personality, and some of the obviously people are angry. So a lot of people looked at his attitude saying he just doesn't care. He's immature. We need to get rid of Alec Boehm. Charlie, let's talk about Alec Boehm. Let's go around the horn. What did you think of Boehm? And he's a young guy. I'm sure he doesn't have a huge contract. Do you hold on to him? Or what was your thought about Alec Boehm?
When I think about him, I think Scott Rolen, J.D. Drew, guys who just aren't cut out to maybe play here. He's got a different temperament. I don't think he likes criticism or deals with it very well. Again, he was on a tear beginning of the year, and then you see it. And even the second half numbers weren't that bad when you look at him. I think he had 286 after the All-Star break. Power was down, but in the playoffs, he just like disappeared, and it could have been hurt. Of course, he hasn't handled it well. So at the end of the day, do I think he's cut out here long-term? Probably not, because, again, it seems like he made that quick answer to save himself. And said, oh, no, that was all nothing. I'm 100% in. But you can see kind of his real feelings oozing out.
Yeah, he is on a, you know, but he's young. He's, you know, you look at, they've got so many guys on super long contracts. I look at Trey Turner. Ultimately, he was the most disappointing player in the playoffs. You just couldn't count on him at all. Schwarber, very disappointing. Yeah, he led off with that home run. And Rob Thompson's been extended, so he's comfortable now. And I just wonder, so firstly, let's hear about Boehm. I want to make sure that I hear every, weigh in on Boehm. Stay or go, Spencer?
It's not easy. I actually love Boehm's personality. I think he's tough. I think that the clubhouse likes him. I like him a lot more than Nick Castellanos. Like, I think he showed a lot of mental fortitude because he was really struggling early in his career. The problem with Alec Boehm, Bruce, he's not that fast on the base paths, and he doesn't have home run power. He has kind of, he's a singles hitter. You know, he'd be a guy that's better at the front of the lineup. He can get on base. He's good with contact. Like, the guy puts the bat on the ball, but I was expecting him as a 6'5" rangy player. You would expect him to have home run power. He just doesn't. And It just maybe you want a smaller third baseman that's like maybe really fast. Maybe you want a smaller guy that could just be just the Phillies. I think, Josh, need some small ball versatility. They need to they need contact. They need to go the other way. And I guess maybe Alec
does that. He does that.
So I guess maybe you probably keep that. What do you think about Boehm?
I love
Josh?
Boehm. Okay. I think he got burned out. I think he got. I cannot stand the All-Star game where they always do the home run derby, and I think that puts way too much pressure. At one point, he was leading the home run derby. They put so much of an emphasis on changing your swing. And Spencer, Alec Boehm is that he's not your traditional third baseman where they're going to put up 40 home runs. He's the type of guy that does slap doubles and triples. He has a lot of
doubles at the beginning of the year, doubles and triples.
Loves it.
And again, I think if you ever you've played in a scramble before in golf, a scramble reminds me of the home run derby. You're basically, when I played a scramble, I'm trying to outdrive somebody like Spencer or even somebody like you, Josh, where I'm changing my swing and I'm just, because if I don't hit that drive out really far, I'm not going to contribute. And then when it comes time to playing my own score the next round out, it messes up my. So I think the home run derby is detrimental, Well, I don't think the slam dunk is. But, maybe the 3 points.
But Bruce, also benching Alec Boehm in these games is just malpractice. He's one of your best players. He's a guy. Alec Boehm's a guy that needs a pat on the back, and that was the complete opposite treatment that Topper demonstrated this postseason.
Well, this half hour, we've used the whole half hour, which is great because we're going to have enough time for college football and our fearless picks. And we're getting a lot done. We are Rover Sports. We'll be back.
WWDB 860 AM Philadelphia and WPEN HD2 Burlington, Philadelphia.
We are, of course, WPEN 860 AM. We are 97.5 HD2. WWDBAM.com for many of you people. The Bruce Grossinger Facebook page, of course, as you know, is finite. It has gone the way of the Titanic. It is now somewhere in the Pacific. And it will rise again, just like a phoenix from the ashes. And what it does, I'll be the first to let you know, but right now, it doesn't exist. But you can see us on PhyllisSportsDoc YouTube. Of course, Slaughterhouse Sports. Everybody likes Spencer Grossinger, Facebook, especially Spencer. He considers it's very lucky, and he's got some world leaders, mostly from the Western Bloc, mostly from Berlin, and people like that, people he worships like some of the great dictators of our time. I say that tongue-in-cheek for Spencer because we have fun, because he did get caught in traffic. There was a, I believe there was a Volkswagen bug. I think it was on fire on his way over, so he had a very good excuse for being late today. Great excuse, perfect excuse. But you notice I'm wearing my Longhorn shirt for all of you guys on YouTube, and I'm obviously a homer for Alexa Denberg, who is our niece, for your cousin, and they are number one in the land. Those Texas Longhorns are number one in the land, and we're going to spotlight some games this week. So the first game I want to spotlight is Georgia Bulldogs against the Texas Longhorns in Austin. And I want everybody's input in that game, and we're also going to talk about Penn State a little bit. But first, Penn State, I believe, we're going into the bye this week.
They are.
But I still want to do a review, because that game was a game worth mentioning. Let's talk a little bit of – this is the game of the week.
Of Georgia-Texas.
Georgia-Texas. What do you see, Spence?
I'm really excited for this game. Texas has the number one defense in the country. They also have the number one offense in the country with Arch Quinn Ewers. Sark does a great job of, when you're really aggressive, like Oklahoma blitzes a lot, he uses your aggressiveness against you. So when a team goes upfield, when the D-line pushes upfield, he'll throw a draw at you. He'll throw a screen pass. And this defense is terrific. Now, of course, what is a lot of people going to say? They're going to say, who have they played? And yes, Michigan's quarterback play was terrible. Oklahoma has an awful offense, just terrible offense at Oklahoma that they're not going to get fixed. But I still look at the athleticism. Like, Anthony Hill's a tremendous linebacker. These guys fly around. The team speed is elite. And beating a rival, just killing them by 30 points when the rival has a week to rest. Like, Oklahoma's defense has so much talent, like NFL Sunday talent. And Texas wore them down. I can't wait for this matchup. I really liked how Texas beat Oklahoma to a pulp. I like the way that this team carries itself with confidence. And for Georgia's defense, Bruce, I don't think it's a vintage Georgia defense. I don't think it's a vintage Georgia front. Carson Beck, like, I'm worried about their running game. Like, they're not getting ETN going. Listen, off the field stuff, you have the drivers that are always, you know, you have all these guys going to jail, or Kirby, you know, is pushing a player. Like, I don't think that's a big deal, but that's going to be the talking point all week. So I still think Texas has a great opportunity here. I think Texas is the better football team.
Josh, what do you see in that game?
I think it's going to be a great game. I think people will be talking about it. I still think Georgia football is number one across the land. I really do. I think they've established themselves over the last 4 years, and they've already lost the game to Alabama. So I think they're hungry. I think they're going to be like a wounded dog, and they're going to give Texas a heck of a fight, and I think they'll definitely change the AP poll come Monday.
Yeah, you know what? As much as I'm wearing my Texas, I have a ton of Texas gear because we have it in the family. I'm also concerned. I kind of go on my gut feel. My gut feel is that Texas, they beat a team. They beat Michigan at the right time when Michigan was in a state of flux earlier in the year. There's something about the SEC. I think Georgia has something to prove. And Texas, you know, beat up on an Oklahoma team that with no offense at all. I think Kirby's going to have – they're really going to be up for this game. And they know how important it is. And I think it's going to be a great game. Now, I look at Texas. They're it's a very big team. Their offensive, defensive lines are big. Very athletic teams. So you've got great teams on both sides of the ball. I want to get Charlie's input. Then I'm going to work back to you, Spence. Charlie, you break down these games and you look at it. Firstly, what is the spread for the game at this point?
Texas is up to a 4-point favorite, total of 56.
So Texas is favored?
Yes, they are.
What do you you have a lot to say about this game? What do you see in the game?
Well, I watched almost every bit of Georgia this year, almost every minute of Texas. I watched Georgia just struggle with Kentucky, Mississippi State, The shocking was Mississippi State last week. They had every reason in the world to come out and play well at home, homecoming. And again, they just laid a turd. I think, like, I'm with Spence. Texas is the better football team. Georgia's riding their coattails in the last couple of years. I don't know what it is about Beck. He's never really made that next step. Or, and look, it was struggled just a little bit last week, too, in the beginning, but then he came on strong in the end. I think Texas is the favorite for a reason, and I think Texas walks out number one.
Spence, what do you think?
I agree, because I was going to ask you. I mean, I think Beck is a good complementary player. Now, his stats looked really good last week. He threw for 460. You're missing Brock Bowers, which is so massive. The running game of Georgia, like, the way Georgia's going to win, Bruce, is by running the football and playing complementary, because you don't want Beck to throw it 40 times. You don't want a repeat of Alabama, do you, where Beck is throwing interceptions and you're down by a ton, 35-7. I don't think Texas can run the ball against – I don't think Georgia can run the ball against Texas. I don't see a path for Georgia's offense to play sustainable, good football. And I think Texas can actually win this game by double digits. That's what I would say. I think Texas will win. Bruce, I'm going to ask you. You're picking Georgia. What is the type of game, what's the path that the Bulldogs are going to use to beat Texas?
Okay, I think that Quinn Ewers is not used to – I think they're going to pressure him. I believe that Georgia is going to come up with some very interesting defensive schemes. And the way they're going to win is by pressuring Quinn Ewers, who's a pocket quarterback. Reminds me of Matt Ryan, I guess. He's a tall, thin guy. He's very professional, very mature. And I also think they're going to scheme up the defense. Those linebackers are going to be coming in. There's going to be some hits. Georgia still hits really hard. I think if Georgia wins, and I think it's going to be a very close game, and I would say that 4 points is too many points for me, but I still think it could Texas win. They're at home. We've got a great crowd. We've been there. I'm rooting for them. I have a familial connection to Texas.
So you're seeing a low scoring game and turnovers.
I didn't even mention the score, but I think there's going to be turnovers. I think that the way that Georgia wins is by just throwing Ewers off his spot. And that's what I see. I do want to spend, just before we get to our picks, I think we give an homage to the Penn State Nittany Lions. And Josh is wearing his alma mater. I'll tell you, that game, that win, going away all the way to the West Coast and playing USC, a real team, and really having to come back and having to show a creative offense, yeah, that flag football play. Drew Aller, just a throw he made on that play. When he could plant his feet correctly, he's got a professional arm. And they had a lot of opportunities to lose that game. And USC had a great crowd at the Rose Bowl. They really were up for the game. And Penn State had they could have folded. And I don't remember a game where Penn State had gone so far away and came up with such a clutch win. And you, obviously you're an alum. Did you feel it there, Josh?
I mean, it was great. I'm not going to lie. You know, Tyler Warren set a record, 17 receptions. Tyler Warren played 4 different positions. Tyler Warren caught the ball. He snapped the ball. Looked like a trick play, which will never happen again, you know, where it was snapped to Bo Prabilla, the backup quarterback, and then they flipped it over, a backwards pass to Aller, and then he mossed someone in the end zone. So Tyler Warren is having – he's clearly up for the Mackey. He's one of the best players, another good tight end that's coming through Penn State right now. It was a big win. However, Doc, I always say this. I also know what Penn State is, and we still got a tough game next week at Wisconsin at 7:30, and then Ohio State comes calling. And James Franklin has never been able to do it. Now, on Saturday, it showed me something. When Aller doesn't face pressure and he can plant his feet, he can move the ball. But when he faces pressure, and I know after a tough loss last week by Ohio State, where they lost to Oregon, they'll be ready. And they'll have it. I'm sure that'll be a night game as well.
Spencer, you're a big Oregon Ducks fan. There's no secret about that.
Yeah.
And did you see anything about that game where Oregon beat Ohio State? Did you see any template that you would follow if you are in the ear of James Franklin? What did you see about the – how did the Ducks win that game? Yeah. And how could that be transposed to the Penn State Nittany Lions?
Well, first off, it's very unfortunate, but TV rules everything. So I wanted the Penn State game to be a whiteout game, but Fox Sports runs the entire college football. The game has to be at noon, so I'm probably going to be even asleep when the game starts. But anyway, it's a noon game. The other thing that I was going to mention, though, is that Penn State, the one worry I have is that they don't have the wide receivers. I wish they could have gone out and spent some of that money. You have Fleming, but Keandre Lambert-Smith was probably would have been the best wide receiver. You're relying on Tyler Warren, and listen, he's a great story, but will he be able to separate against Ohio State's DBs? I think that Oregon has the best wide receiver group in the country. If Tez Johnson, who's going to be a second-round pick, Bo Nix's brother, and then you also have Evan Stewart, five-star, unbelievable player, going to be a first-round pick and going to be a factor at the NFL level. That's how they beat Ohio State, with Dylan Gabriel throwing the ball, and you can't replicate it at Penn State. And two, Ohio State got away from the ground game. Like, if you were going to tell me Will Howard would throw for 280 and no picks, Will Howard's not supposed to lead this team. It's supposed to be a running back team, and Will Howard's supposed to be a compliment and not lead it.
They paid a high price for him to be a compliment.
He is a compliment. Kansas State moved on from him. Was he an elite player at Kansas State? Is he a draft pick?
He got paid $3 million to come to Ohio State.
Josh, their running game has Quinshon Judkins and Henderson, and they were gashing Oregon, and Ryan Day got away from it. Listen, Ohio State, unfortunately, I think they're better than Penn State. And Charlie, you were watching that game. If Will Howard didn't make that mistake, Ohio State could have won that game against Oregon with a field goal there.
We are going into... There's the music again. The Fearless Picks. And I know that our guy, the master of all dubbing, Matthew Vito, will be giving us that beautiful music.
All right, Doc. So,
we're going to do the Fearless Picks because there's so much to talk about in college football. But I think a lot of people, when they tune into Rover Sports, they want the Fearless Picks. Let's roll it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to lead off. Then I'm going to basically go Spencer, Josh, Colin, and Charlie. Charlie's the anchor man because Charlie's always the guy who comes up. I don't want anybody stealing his thunder because he's the guy who is the most interesting man in the world.
Okay.
So let's go.
All right, so Doc, week 7. We're going to open up a Thursday night game. Denver looking more and more promising. They travel to New Orleans and New Orleans is getting 2.5.
Okay. I am a big fan of Bo Nix. However, I think that the Saints are going to feast on Bo Nix. It's a very loud arena, very tough to be a rookie quarterback. And I think the Saints, they had a big divisional game. Now, yeah, that was a physical game. But as much as I want the Broncos to win, I don't think Bo Nix is going to be ready. So I think this is an easy victory. I'm picking the Saints in this game. Wow. Go ahead.
That would be disappointing for Denver. I think that you're also relying, Bruce, Derek Carr's not in. You're relying on Rattler. You're picking Spencer Rattler to go out and beat Denver really badly. I think Sean Payton wants revenge. He's going back home to New Orleans, going to the Dome. I just think Denver's a more complete team. I don't know about Sertan's concussion, but Denver's more complete. Denver better win this game. So I'm taking the Broncos, and let's take the Broncos, and hopefully they win by 10. I'm a big Bo Nix fan, too.
I know you are. Go ahead,
so,
Josh.
Doc, I like New Orleans here. Chris Ovale will not have the week that he just had. I think Spencer Rattler could be turning into something special. And Alvin Kamara's been solid all year. So I don't think they're going to lay two duds back-to-back weeks. So I'm taking New Orleans.
Colin?
I think New Orleans has got this one. It might be an ugly Thursday night game, but I like the Saints and probably outright.
Charlie?
Oh, my God. Rattler had some moments last week, believe it or not. Like, before they tanked in the second half, Rattler looked pretty sturdy and then all of a sudden went over a cliff. I still think Bo Nix on the road is tough to ask a rookie quarterback in that environment, so I'll figure Seattle will win 3-2. I'm sorry, New Orleans won 3-2.
You got it. Go ahead.
Next game, two very good high-powered offenses. You got Houston, 5-1. Go ahead and up to Green Bay. Green Bay's 4-2. Jordan Love looked awesome last week. He had 4 touchdowns. The Green Bay's given up 2.5 to Houston.
So Houston's getting 2.5.
Yes, sir.
I like what's going on with Green Bay. They just seem like that ball's rolling downhill. Lambeau is a great crowd. Jordan Love's back. I think it is a good game, a high-powered game. I think Texas, you say they're 5-1. The Texans, I should say. Same kind of thing. I am I'm feeling comfortable about Green Bay in this particular contest. I think the Texans are due for a loss. Spets?
Yeah, I hope that Jaden Reed is healthy. It looks like Nico Collins is going to be out some time. I really like the Packers, too. Very impressed that they took care of business against the Cards. It's at home. Remember, Houston went up to Minnesota to another Northern team and got absolutely killed and whipped. I think Green Bay also, I like them at home. That's a low number. Green Bay wins and covers.
I think Green Bay. I like what I'm seeing with you, Jordan Love.
Colin?
I think Green Bay is coming into form. I like the Packers.
Charlie?
I think that Houston is a legit Super Bowl contender. I think they'll go in there, and I think they'll take care of business.
Excellent.
Not
always
consensus.
A great take. Yeah. And they could be. It just could be their team. I'm just not used to seeing them be that good. And Charlie watches them and breaks it down in great detail.
Game three, you got Detroit, you know, Jared Goff's squad. They got a pair of good running backs in Jamar Gibbs and David Montgomery. They're traveling up to the undefeated Minnesota Vikings. You got your guy Sam Darnold running the show.
Sammy.
He's already looking at a $50 million contract coming up his way. Justin Jefferson, they're undefeated, coming off a bye. Doc, where are we going? I'm sorry, Minnesota's giving up 2.5.
And they're playing Detroit. So Minnesota, Detroit. Detroit's getting 2.5.
Yep.
Obviously, they lost their defensive end to a tib-fib fracture. Great, great guy there. But Detroit's coming off a mammoth victory away. Yeah. So this is the game I feel least comfortable about in picking because I can envision almost anything happening in this game. I don't have a good feel for the game. I am just going to I would have picked Detroit, and just because I saw what they did, and they were so hot. And I know Minnesota has won, and they'd be great. I'm just going to go with Detroit just for a gut feel. I don't have a good reason.
Yeah, I think Detroit's impressed me. I know that they went to Arizona. They went to Dallas. They're really buttoned up. Like, they're showing a lot of strength. But I think Minnesota off of the bye, Brian Flores, this is a really good team. And I think Minnesota keeps the magic going.
I like Amon St. Brown. I love Jared Goff. I think Sam LaPorta is going to get it rolling. I think Detroit's – Charlie mentioned Houston. I like Detroit as a Super Bowl contender.
Go ahead, Colin.
I like the Lions outright here. I think Minnesota's just due for one.
Yeah. Charlie, what do you think?
Loss of Hutchinson hurts. Is Reddick going to end up there? We don't know. I still think Darnold may be on borrowed time. But I like Detroit.
Next game, Josh.
Kansas City, Charlie's favorite, Taylor Swift and crew, 5-0. And Travis Kelce traveling to San Francisco. Brock Purdy's back into form. Brandon Ayuk actually looks like a $120 million player the last couple of weeks. Christian McCaffrey's still out. No one's sure what's going on with Jordan Mason yet. But San Francisco is giving them 1.5.
So, I think every dog has his day. I see that San Fran is due to have a really big victory. I think Kansas City, they always start off slow. They've usually had a few more losses than they do now. But I just think they're due to have a loss. I don't think they're going to be overly focused on this one. They're going to be focusing on their division. And I believe that the momentum is with the 49ers. And I think their defense is going to... I think Mahomes is going to be running for his life in this game, and I don't think Taylor Swift is going to save them. And I'm not a big fan of Kelce or Swift. In fact, but quite the opposite. So I'm going to predict one of my least favorite teams, that is the 49ers, winning this game. Go ahead, Spence.
Yeah, I might even like the 49ers more than the Chiefs. I'm with you. This would be my pick of the week. San Francisco is a good team. Like, they should have beaten Arizona. Like, Ayuk and Purdy are awesome. The Chiefs, like, are winning kind of ugly. The 49ers are going to turn out their best game of the year. Completely agree. They're going to prepare beautifully, like you said, Bruce. I think the 49ers win and win big.
Josh?
Andy Reid coming off a bye. It's hard to go against. So I'm going to take Kansas City.
Hard to go against them, and they always seem to do it. Colin?
I'm going to go with the 49ers. I think the line tells you something there, 49ers.
Charlie?
Play from the line, Pat Mahomes or Brock Purdy. Give me Mahomes.
Game five, I guess? Game five?
Yes, sir. We have Baltimore 4-2. Lamar Jackson putting up a MVP-type season. Mark Andrews finally got in the fold last week. Derrick Henry looks like he's back in MVP form. Travels to Tampa Bay, where you got Baker Mayfield, who threw for 4 touchdowns. Chris Godwin had 2 touchdowns last week. Their defense had 2 interceptions. They're on fire. Tampa Bay's given up 3.5 to Baltimore.
That's really interesting. So Baltimore is actually getting 3.5 points from Tampa Bay.
Baltimore's favored by 3.
Oh, I'm sorry. So Baltimore is giving 3.5 points to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And the game is in Tampa?
Yep.
Well, I think this is going to be a fun game to watch. These are teams that don't play each other often. And NFL, I must say, they could create great matchups here. This is another one I could envision. I think Tampa Bay, there's something about them. And their defense could be fierce. I think that Baker has something going and something to prove. The Ravens are hot. Again, I don't have a really good feeling about this, but I really like what's going on in Tampa Bay. They've got good fans. They really do. It's not going to be 110 degrees, but I'm picking Tampa Bay in this game.
Yeah, I could see that, Bruce, but I'm going with the Ravens. They're just too good on offense. I'm worried, you know, I am a little worried that the turnovers of Baker, like, are you going to get those explosive plays against this Baltimore defense? I think Baltimore can run the football. They're just a lot more talented, and the Ravens are going to win in coverage.
Josh, what do you see?
Lamar Jackson and Zay Flowers, they're combining for over 100 yards in receiving and passing. Derrick Henry's back on fire. I take Baltimore.
Colin?
I think the Ravens will cover here.
Charlie?
Very bizarre line. Remember, home underdogs were 0-9 against the spread last week. Something to think about, and I don't know if that's ever happened. Again, end of the day, it's common sense versus reading a line. I just think this year it's been more common sense. I think Baltimore is, you know, you have run game and defense travels.
Our last game, of course, is the game of the week. We'll be attending. Spencer and I will be at MetLife Stadium. What is the spread?
The Eagles are getting 3. I'm sorry, the Giants are getting 3.
The Giants are getting 3. So, watch a lot of both of these teams. I feel that the Eagles will win this game, and they will win by more than 3. I've seen the Giants play, and their offense, it's amazing how bad their offense is. Danny Jones finds ways to turn the ball over and look indecisive. I think the Giants will have, you know, they'll really be focusing on Saquon Barkley, one guy, but I think the Eagles will get well in this game. I think it's going to be ugly, low-scoring game. I pick the Eagles by 6 in an ugly game where their personnel, their offensive personnel particularly, will just be better. Spencer?
Could be a high-scoring game because both teams are going to just focus on their offense. Like, Dable's just going to be worried about offense. I don't know if the Giants have – it's very hard to get up for that. The defensive game against Cincy was phenomenal. And I don't know if they can back that up again. However, I think Jones is going to play better in this game. And Jalen Hurts against this pass rush, I think the Giants have a good edge here with the pass rush. I think the Giants win the game outright.
Josh?
You know, Doc, I'm tired of seeing the Eagles sputter. I think, I think with Saquon returning to New York, he's going to let them know everything they're missing. And I think Saquon's going to have a game with A.J. Brown. I think Philly wins easily.
Colin?
I don't think the Eagles are having a great season, but I think they can handle this one.
Charlie, what do you think about this toilet bowl?
I will be flying in from Knoxville, getting in right about, I guess, about 12:45, so I will be driving by that game on the way home. I think that no one's talking about the return of Mr. Neighbors, who should be back this Sunday. Philly, again, always seems to, you know, depending, you know, they can play really well, as in the Westbrook punt return and Deshaun Jackson punt return, or they can lay an egg. The Giants, weird things happen up there. So give me the 3, give me Neighbors, and I think that the Giants will keep this close, maybe win outright.
So just to wrap this up, just saying that, you know, I'm picking the Eagles, but Neighbors is really a tremendous player. He, and also Spencer highlighted the fact the Giants have 27 sacks. They do lead the league in sacks. So you think of the Giants, you don't think of a great defense. But the thing, if they put a lot of pressure on Hurts, he may turn the ball over. So that's why I'm saying it's a low-scoring game. But I've seen the Giants, especially against the Bengals, their offense was horrific. So this hour flew by. I want to thank everybody who tuned in to Rover Sports, everybody on radio, AM, FM, on your phone, on YouTube, Slaughterhouse Sports, Spencer Grossinger Facebook. I also want to thank everybody. Please tune in to the Seth Joyner postgame show. I will be on a mobile. I'll be on an iPhone, and I'll be giving you an updated report. So everybody subscribe to Seth Joyner postgame report. And as always, thank you all for tuning in, and good night and good sports.
The Sports Doctor is on the air. Dr. Bruce Grossinger with Rover Sports Tuesday evenings at 7:30 on WWDB. Dr. Bruce and the Rover crew blend sports and pop culture to keep you entertained and thinking. Brought to you by the Philadelphia Regenerative Medicine and Stem Cell Institute, where Dr. Grossinger and his team help athletes and chronic pain sufferers heal faster and stronger, often without the need for drugs or surgery. Visit online at phillysportsdoc.com and tune in to WWDB Tuesday nights at 7:30 for Rover Sports.